You're listening to Cinematic Adventures, proud member of the Misfit Faction Media Network.
Good morning, Vietnam!
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
I feel the need for speed.
Roads, we're going, we don't need roads.
Snakes, why did it have to be snakes?
Vices? We don't need no vices. I don't have to show you any stinking vices.
You make me want to be a better man.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Love means never having to say you're sorry.
He's looking at you, kid.
Not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cinematic Adventures. Don't forget, if you guys are listening to us on the go, you could find us on Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, basically anywhere you get your podcasts. You guys can also find more of our content on our website, themisfitfaction.com. There you find links to not only this show, but some of our other shows like the Multiverse Fancast and MF Uncensored. If you guys are watching on YouTube, make sure you leave a like down below, comment, subscribe for more mediocre content. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Paul. With me via the Zoom studio and from your mom's diary is Sean. Sean, how are you today?
I'm wonderful, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. You know, I'm happy to be back. Unfortunately, we had to take a week off because, my basement started to flood. And luckily, I managed to catch it on time, and that's where the podcast studio is. So luckily, no damage to the equipment. However, once you have a giant hole in your basement and you're, you know, doing 4G humidifiers to try and clean it all up, it's a little hard to do a podcast when there's a that much noise in the background. So Sean was gracious enough to allow me to take a week off from...
I know we had a schedule thing here, but I could hear it in your voice. You were just like, I ain't got it, man.
It wasn't there. The water from the dishwasher and the tears from my eyes were really just, you know, combining at that point.
But I have to say the effect of water falling behind you would have added to...
It would have been majestic.
It would have been really nice, you know.
A little romantic, you know.
And then Melanie holding a bucket behind you with a glare goes, I hate you.
Yeah, I don't want to think about that. I'm a little scared about that. But anyway, we are back, and as per tradition, for the last couple of years while we've been doing this show, we always try and devote May to Star Wars. We did a little bit of Star Wars at the beginning of the month, but now we find ourselves at this point where it's like we ran out of mainstream Star Wars movies. Now, Sean and I also have differing experiences with Star Wars, where I've watched a lot more of the non-movie stuff than he has. He knows The Mandalorian exists. However, he actively chooses not to watch it at this point. It's on him. And make sure you guys leave a comment down below that Sean should watch The Mandalorian, at least season one. But so... Sean proposed the idea that maybe we take a look at another franchise. And what better franchise during Star Wars month to look at than its quote-unquote rival? Because that's kind of out the door at this point. But we are going to be talking about Star Trek. Now, to be specific, we will be talking about the J.J. Abrams Star Trek reboot from 2009. We wanted to go with that because it's a little bit more culturally relevant, and also doing a whole Star Trek the original or even Next Generation episode, that's a big ask.
Maybe sometime in the future we'll do a Star Trek, you know,
like a whole here and there retrospective type thing, because go ahead.
I will tell you, on Amazon Prime, there is a fantastic 11-part documentary on the making of Star Trek from the beginnings all the way to Voyager.
Yeah.
On the TV shows and the movies. Very, very good.
It's not the Trekkie one, is it?
No, this is like a solid documentary about it, stuff like that. It was really, really good.
Well, Trekkie's derogatory. It's Trekker now. Trekker. That's from Fanboys. If you guys haven't seen the movie Fanboys, we did an episode on Fanboys during Star Wars Month. I think the first year we did Star Wars Month.
It was either the first or it was the second, because obviously if it's tie-in to the prequel trilogy. Yeah,
that's fair. Because
I think we did Spaceballs the first year.
That probably at this point, which is funny because now we're talking Star Trek. Spaceball is also parodies Star Trek. So we decided.
Beam me up, Scotty.
Snotty beamed me twice. So let's start though. Were you a fan of Star Trek growing up? I know you and I haven't really talked old school Star Trek.
I didn't watch it. It wasn't that I wasn't interested in it. It was, as I recall, for the first most of our childhood, the original show was nowhere to be found. I do remember, like, in the late 90s, the Sci-Fi Channel started airing the original Star Trek, and that was, like, a big deal. Like, I remember every night my dad would watch it from, it was, like, 7 o'clock at night, you know, and it was one episode a night, and he watched that for a solid, probably 2 years. He probably watched through the whole series. But even my dad wasn't a huge Trekkie. So no, Star Trek wasn't a big deal in my life as a kid. However, we did watch Enterprise, the final TV series of, I guess, of what you call the original TV series run with Scott Bakula. That was an interesting series. We liked that one.
Yeah. So growing up, I was not a big Star Trek guy, and I kind of fed into the whole Star Wars versus Star Trek debate, which it's a fun debate. But at this point, the franchises are so different and they have their own styles, and like, it's apples and oranges.
You can argue the same thing that's happening to Star Wars that we talked about in our previous episode. You could argue is happening to Star Trek. I mean, if you go on Paramount Plus, I mean, that's their big thing is Star Trek. And they got so many new shows that I didn't even know existed.
Yeah, they have Picard. They have New Frontiers or something like that.
Something like that. I mean, there's been a couple of new Star Trek shows over the last, like, 5, 6, 7 years. There's a new animated TV series.
Oh, Below Deck or something like that? Or something,
Below Deck, yeah.
Something like that.
So they're really getting back into the TV aspect, whereas the movies, there's rumors going around that they might bring back the J.J. Abrams cast, but it really, nothing's kind of been set in stone, and, you know, we don't know where it's going to go from there.
Yeah. So, but it is a testament that a lot of the Star Trek characters, even though we did not grow up necessarily watching Star Trek, like, we got to a point where we all knew who, like, Captain Kirk was, James T. Kirk, you know, from Star Trek, mm-hmm. Enterprise. Like, we knew all that. We knew Spock. We knew a lot of the big characters. Star Trek did a lot of groundbreaking. It, you know, it had the first interracial kiss on television. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a cast that they were on that show for, like, that show ran for...
A very diverse cast. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Agent Uhura. Oh, my God. Mr. Sulu. Why am I blanking on the actor's name?
Not Leonard Nimoy. Oh, wow. Yeah. Hello. George Takei.
I mean, yeah. Jesus, I'm sorry. So yeah, they were
watching.
I mean, they were ahead of their time. I mean, it was amazing what they did back then. But that's always been sci-fi, you know, not just Star Trek. Twilight Zone has been able to do that a lot with you know, taking very taboo subjects and, you know, putting them under the guise of science fiction. And a lot of times that's how they were able to push this past, you know, the networks and the studios to really get this stuff on the air. And Star Trek was a big proponent of that, and Gene Roddenberry was a huge proponent of that.
Yeah. So this movie rolls around, though, and I personally think they made the smarter choice by creating a diverging timeline. Now, we've had a lot of instances, like, sometimes it really works, like in this. I think this worked. Sometimes you get Terminator Genesis and it doesn't work.
The Flash.
Yeah, sometimes you get the Flash. Oh, God. But this movie...
I have not personally talked to someone who, you know, was not... I know it was a tough sell when the movie came out. There were some Star Trek fans that did not like what they did.
Mm-hmm.
With that. So, but I thought it was an interesting... It was a bold move, you know.
Yeah. But I think it paid off for them. And it created a franchise where not only did a lot of actors who we knew of or knew to a point, like, for some of them, like, this for me, like, I knew of Chris Pine, maybe, like, from like the Princess Diaries 2 or something like that. But
this was his big break. Absolutely.
Oh yeah. Like, I mean, before that he did like Just My Luck and Smoking Aces and stuff like that.
Your boy Zachary Quinto, I mean, he was on a very, very successful TV series at the time with Heroes. I mean, that was his... He was really breaking out from that TV show. And then, because I remember when they cast him as Spock, everybody was just like, holy crap, that makes a lot of sense.
Oh, my God. And we're going to go through the cast one by one. But yeah, the casting in this movie is fantastic. Like, and I think this movie also benefits from the fact that they make the storyline is very simple. And when we're going to talk about the second and third movies as a whole next week. This is kind of the preamble to it. But it sets up what happens in the second movie and all that, because when we get to it, we'll talk about, you know, the Wrath of Khan versus how they portray Khan in this universe. And it's an interesting, like, they keep it simple in terms of this is what happened and this is why everything's different, done. And that's it. That's all we needed. So
yeah, there's no drawing it out. It's just, you know, it's like, I wasn't supposed to live this life. I was supposed to know my father. Oh, okay.
And I think they do a good job. I remember the teasers for this. Like, the first teaser was just the Enterprise being built. Mm-hmm. And like, it was just the Enterprise looks fantastic in this movie. Like,
and this movie was a gamble. I mean, Star Trek was kind of, I guess you could say Star Trek was kind of dead.
At the time it
was coming out.
I think Next Generation had, you know, had finished its run, and they had their movies.
Yeah, and their last movie was a bomb, was a box office bomb in Nemesis. So, like, that was 2002. So it's 7 years. I mean, it feels like it would have been longer, but 7 years is still a decent long time.
Also, I think they have the benefit for the fact that, like, the whole Kirk versus Picard debate was, like, it was still in the Trekkie community or Trekker community. I don't want to alienate anyone. Alienate. But for a lot of people, I think myself included, as a kid, I didn't know that there was an original Star Trek. I thought the Next Generation was Star Trek. So mm-hmm. it's in 2007, there's a lot of younger audience members who would have thought the same thing about, like, oh, episode 1, 2, and 3 of Star Wars came out after 4, 5, and 6. Like, there's a whole generation of people that think Star Wars comes out, like, it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, 7, 8, 9. And now I think this movie had the benefit, but they went with the original Star Trek cast as opposed to maybe doing a rehash of Next Generation. So let's run through the cast list, because obviously we said it. He is fantastic. The whole cast is. We have Chris Pine as James T. Kirk. And you had a lot of other people in the running. Chris Pratt tried out for it. Timothy Oliphant tried out for it. I could see Chris Pratt obviously now after Star-Lord, but I think Chris Pine.
I actually think Timothy Oliphant would have been a good Kirk.
Yeah, I just think he would have been a little old for a young Kirk.
That's probably why he didn't get it. He was probably too old at the time.
So I find that Chris Pine did a really good job. I like Chris Pine. I want to see him do more stuff. And I really wish they cast him as Hal Jordan in some sort of Green Lantern project. But I think he was great in Wonder Woman. And he was a better example of Wonder Woman 84. Like, he was the better part of that movie. But he rolls in, and I think the biggest thing that he didn't do, which I think we all kind of appreciate, is he did not try and be Shatner.
No.
Because
he had the cockiness. He had the cockiness down, but he didn't really try to mimic Shatner in any way. He really didn't do any of that.
As far as looks go, he does look like a young William Shatner. Like, they do have a lot of physical, like, I'm looking at his headshot right now, and I'm like, man, like, old school Kirk. They actually did. It's funny. We grew up with Shatner being just older, like an older guy. So, like, it's hard to imagine him, you know, lean and young and, you know, dark hair and all that stuff. Like, we see him as William Shatner now. Like, I see him from Dodgeball, you know, pulling the trophy out of Dwight Goodman's hands. Like, that's when I think William Shatner, I see that kind of image. But yeah. I think Pine does a really great job, and they do a lot of expectation subversion. And I think that it benefits from having a different timeline where Kirk is raised differently. He's raised without a father. And, you know, he's a little bit more rebellious. He, like, a little bit more anti-authority. And I think it works. And him and Spock's dynamic throughout the film is awesome.
Agreed.
Sean agrees. Thank you. I'm going to do a little graphic that says Sean agrees. One.
Sean agrees.
But I, you know, for the other day for Multiverse Fancast, Ronnie and I were talking about editing, and we were talking about, like, you know, effects in Marvel movies, how they've been so bad. So I added a bunch of bad effects to our video just for 5 seconds of Ronnie being on screen. I was very proud of my work on that one. Make sure you guys check that out. Like, comment, subscribe. But anyway, so let's talk about Spock. Zachary Quinto riding high off of Heroes. Like, he's still starting Heroes while this was going on. So
yes.
In the show Heroes.
Season 2 of Heroes?
Like that, yeah, because he started growing his hair out for it. Because he went, like, full-on Spock with his hair. I think he even shaved his eyebrows, too, for this.
But you like, to the point where they cast Zachary Quinto, and you look at him, and you're just like, that, I can see that. It was just like that. Clearly, they wanted someone who resembled Nimoy, in a way.
Well, because they had to, because... Spoilers, by the way, spoilers for 2007 Star Trek. Leonard Nimoy is in this movie.
Yes.
And you can't have a past and future version of a character, and they look, especially because they're not that far off in age, like maybe 20 years. I like to think that if I were to see myself in 20 years, I'd still look up at least similar to myself, you know, ruggedly handsome and good looking. But anyway, so I think Zach Quinto, he brings in the stoicism, which he's great at, but then you get to see his bursts of emotion. And Quinto's a good, like, angry guy, and that's why he was so much fun in Heroes. If you guys haven't watched Heroes, season one of Heroes still is fantastic. I know, Sean, you've seen a few episodes, so you might have. I don't know. Did you ever see Zach Quinto on Heroes? Did you make it that
far? Yeah, was it Siler?
Yeah. One of the coolest characters.
Because I remember when he was cast, you were like, dude, I got to show you some of him on Heroes.
Yeah.
He's badass on Heroes.
Which is funny because he on Heroes, not to sidetrack, but it's our show. We can sidetrack all we want. He is a perfect example on Heroes where a character becomes too popular. And rather than kill him off, they try all these different storylines that just don't work. And they try and redeem him at the end. And it's rough. It's funny because the first podcast that I ever listened to was a Heroes podcast. Like when I first found out what podcasts were, and it was called the 10th Wonder Podcast. And every time they've brought Heroes back in some capacity, they've revived the show and like done it. So I was listening. They did an episode because there's rumblings that there's a Heroes revival coming. Around the time that solar eclipse happened at the beginning of April, that's when they announced it, which was genius in itself. But, you know, Zach Quinto, he talks a lot about his time on Heroes, and like you hear him all the time. He's like, I was just an actor. Like, I just do the part that I'm playing. And he comes into this and he does a great job. And anybody who can rock that bowl cut immediately gets my respect on that one. But speaking of Spock, we do have Leonard Nimoy reprising his role as quote-unquote Spock Prime. I think it was smart to have that connection to the older universe. And if you're going to bring a character back, I think Spock was the better choice. Because I know Shatner was less than happy that he was not brought back.
Yeah, and I was kind of surprised they went that route by having, you know, the multiple versions of a character. But it worked. But that could have blown up in their face. I feel like that could have been just silly.
It could have been a Star Wars sequel trilogy.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, it was, you know, when you first see him and you see him on camera and you're like, oh crap, this guy still has it. You know that scene where he's like, you know, I'm your best friend, and Chris Pine's looking at him going like,
no, the hell are you?
I can't stand Spock. What are you talking about?
It really added to me. So, but yeah, I agree. Like when they reintroduce Spock, because we don't know that Spock's in the or Spock Prime is in the movie until about halfway through. That's when we first get him.
I feel like we did know he was going to be in the movie somehow, didn't we? Like, I thought
maybe. I don't remember.
Like leaked or something like that.
But... Well, no, the Khan thing was definitely leaked from.
He was doing a lot of press for the movie. I knew that because they were using him a lot, but for some reason, I feel like that was leaked and we knew somehow he was in the movie, but I could be wrong.
Totally possible. Totally possible. But
this next guy, to me, I feel like he steals the movie.
Oh, who's next on your list?
Carl Urban as Leonard Bones McCoy. I thought this was fantastic casting.
Carl Urban is in this great renaissance of just being so appreciated as an actor. And it's really, he's fantastic. I love Carl Urban. Between this and Dredd and The Boys, Carl Urban, like, even he's even fine in the Doom movie. If they just didn't call it Doom, it would have been fantastic. But, oh God, yeah, him and The Rock. It's so bad.
And obviously, you know, Lord of the Rings. I mean, I know you know, we're both not diehard fans of it, but, you know, he was great in Two Towers and Return of the King.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And he brings his A game to this, and he is the campiness of this movie. But I think having him and Kirk play off each other and be friends, and like their relationship is fantastic. And he kills it completely.
Yeah, Numb tongue.
It's so funny thinking about like being a doctor a thousand years from now, like all the new diseases and stuff. Like it's wild, some of the stuff that they come up with, and I love it. Are we going down the list?
Yep.
All right, we have Zoe Saldana as Nyota Uhura. Now this is another character that, like, Zoe Saldana, another actor, I didn't really know her too well before this. She was in Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl, which is hilarious. But then, like, before that, there wasn't a whole lot. I think, was this around the same time as Avatar? No, Avatar was about, was a couple. Oh, no, it was about
no, Avatar
the
was
year.
The same year. Crap, 2009, which means probably, it's probably either film this first or Avatar first, because Avatar came out later. Avatar came out the end of the year.
Oh, she was in Crossroads. That's it. I figured it out. That's how I knew her. Crossroads with Britney
Spears. I remember her from Center Stage.
Center Stage is a good one. I also remember her, strangely enough, from Guess Who? With But yeah, she's another actress that this, like, she had such a year between this and Avatar, and then she went into The Losers, which I'm a big fan of, Death at a Funeral, Columbiana, and then, you know, eventually she made it to Guardians. But I think she's fine in this movie. She's there. I think they do
I feel like she's kind of not given a lot to do. In the beginning, she's really, you know, she has a few funny moments with Kirk. Because you, like, immediately, like, oh, are they going to put her and Kirk together? You know, they really kind of, you know, he obviously has a, you know, he's obviously infatuated with her. And she, but there is a great moment where, like, she stands up for herself with Spock. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, no. Wasn't I your best student? Yeah, I'm on the Enterprise. It's like, put me on the Enterprise.
Actually, like, one of my favorite moments is when, because he never knows her name. Like, Kirk never finds out, like, her name. She never tells it to him. And so it's not until him and Spock are in the elevator and she kisses him, and Kirk's like, what the hell's going on? And he calls her Nyota. And she leaves, and it cuts to the two of them just kind of awkwardly standing there. And he's like, so her first name's Nyota? And she's like, and Spock goes, I have no comment on the matter. It's just a funny scene. The three of them, I think they do it better in the second movie, strangely enough. Their camaraderie and their chemistry is just really good. Because unfortunately, the one thing that this movie suffers from is having to introduce all of these iconic characters. Some of them have great moments to shine, and we'll talk about some of that. But in all honesty, the main focus of character goes to Chris Pratt, Chris Pine, obviously, is Kirk, Spock, a little bit of Uhura. And then you have, like, Bones has the most kind of character because he builds a relationship. They have a whole sequence dedicated to Scotty. Each actor has a time to shine as their character, but it isn't until, ironically, you get to, like, Into Darkness or even Star Trek Beyond, where they have such a camaraderie with each other that it lends to the story, even though the scripts aren't that good. I'll defend Into Darkness. I do enjoy that movie. And Star Trek Beyond was good, but super forgettable. I've not watched it in its entirety since we saw it.
I liked Beyond, but it wasn't a memorable movie, but it was definitely, I didn't think it was bad. I just, I don't think it was on the level of this or Into Darkness.
All right, going down the list, Simon Pegg, who we are huge fans of. Simon Pegg, throw us, like, Shaun of the Dead or anything like that, we'll definitely put it on. We got to do an episode on Paul one of these days. That would be a fun Star Wars month episode.
He's probably the most well-known actor cast in this movie, that, like, because I mean, this is 2009, this is fresh off of Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead. I mean, like, he would, you know, everybody knew who Simon Pegg was.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like him as Scotty, I thought, was like, okay, I see it, do it, we're good.
Oh, it was perfect, and he kills it. Like, he is a lot of fun in the movie, and it's hard to balance sometimes the humor and the seriousness and all this. And Scotty's one of those characters that's like, And I think it helps that Prime Spock was like, oh my God, that's Scotty. And he's like, who are you? I don't know. And it's a fun sequence when they all finally get together. Because I think having Prime Scott there, or Prime Spock there, as not so much exposition, but also like, hey, like, these are the things that we need to know. I think it helps the older audience connect, but it also helps the newer audience kind of figure things out a little bit easier with the characters. Because, like, if you were not a Star Trek, you can watch this movie not being a Star Trek fan, and you'll be okay, as long as you kind of know, as long as you know Spock. Like, otherwise you're pretty good. But
I like that Simon Pegg doesn't really show up until solid,
like, the last hour. Yeah. Oh yeah. Like,
yeah. They give him a solid scene to really, you know, to really introduce him into. They give him some alone time with Kirk, and you immediately get, you know, that, okay, he's definitely the comedic relief of this movie, and he has some good moments.
Now, going down, another bigger name in this is John Cho as Sulu. John Cho was famous for the Harold and Kumar movies. Like, he had just done, I think, the second one at this point, right? No? Maybe?
Oh, yeah.
But
2007, or, you know, it was Guantanamo Bay.
And obviously most well known for popularizing the phrase MILF. But anyway, so John Cho, he plays Sulu. And I know that there was a little bit of concern beforehand because he's Korean American and Sulu is Japanese American or Japanese. But George Takei was like the first one. He was like, hey, it's a character that represents Asian culture. Like, this is, he also played Sulu as a swashbuckling pirate fan. Instead, they wanted to give him a katana in one of the episodes. And he's like, racist much? So he ended up using a pirate sword. And he's like he loves pirate movies in the original Star Trek show, which I think is awesome. But,
and go ahead.
Oh, no. The scene where, you know, he's like, does anybody have advanced combat training? He's like, I do. And then they're like asking, what's your advanced combat training? He's like, fencing. And Kirk's like, what the hell?
But, and again, you get this, you get that little moment where you first see Sulu and he's obviously having difficulty, and you find out that he's just there because the guy that's supposed to be in his seat was sick.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you see how all these pieces meld together to create, you know, the iconic crew of the Enterprise. But then you get the scene where they sky jump onto this drill that's drilling into, he has his, you know, decently badass moment where he pulls out the sword and he's fighting, you know, the bad guys and stuff like that.
That whole sequence is fantastic. I remember that was, I think, one of the first trailers was the jump, and the jump itself was really cool. And that, like, the lack of sound and all that stuff. And of course, you can't make it up. I love it. In Star Trek, we all know the red shirts. The red shirts are the characters that wear red, and they don't typically survive. To the point where they make a joke about it in the second movie, where they tell one of, I forget, I think it's Anton Yelkin's character, Chevlov, to put on a red shirt. He's like, oh, no. But yeah, the one guy that's wearing all red, of course, horrifically dies. And to the point where I don't know his name, because he's a red shirt. Anyway, speaking of Anton Yelkin, the late Anton Yelkin as Pavlov Chekhov, it is a shame that we have to say the late Anton Yelkin. I actually really liked Anton Yelkin. He was so much, he had so much potential. What was that movie? Charlie Bartlett. You remember that one?
Charlie Bartlett. He was in the remake of Fright Night, and he was in something else, and I'm blanking on what it was. And then, I remember because it was right before Beyond came out. Beyond came out after he had died, and he had like a significant amount of things to do in Beyond. And it was kind of like, it was surprising because we were all like, wow, he had a lot to do in this movie. It's like they knew somehow he wasn't going to be around or something.
Even Into Darkness, he had a much bigger role. Like in this movie, he's there. He does not have the kind of role that he does in the second and third movies, which is wild, especially considering, yes, unfortunately, Anton Yelkin did pass away. It was a car accident. Like his car rolled and like killed him.
I forgot he played Kyle Reese in
Salvation.
Yeah. Salvation.
But he, again, I think when we get to the next two movies, we'll talk a little bit more about him, but he's, because he's just kind of there.
I didn't know he was actually Russian.
Oh, look at that.
He was born in Russia.
Huh. Interesting. All right. We have Eric Bana as the bad guy, Captain Nero. Now,
this is great because Eric Bana is a diehard Star Trek fan.
Yeah. The fact that he got to choke out Captain Kirk, I'm sure he was like loving it. Did you hear the cut storyline with Captain Nero?
No. What was
this? Apparently, there was a cut storyline where he's actually captured after they destroy the Kelvin. So, and his entire crew and him are like locked up by, I think, either Vulcans or Klingons for like the 20 years in between. So that's why they're not just, they weren't just like sitting there waiting. So there's actually like a whole cut storyline. I think you can see some of it there in some of the trailers. And also I think there's probably deleted scenes, but yeah, apparently they were captured and they say it makes the movie a little bit better, but I think he does a great job and he hams it up, and I'm fine with hamming it up, especially if you're the villain. What did you think about Eric Bana as Captain Nero?
I thought he was just, it was kind of like a typical Star Trek film. I thought after seeing the movie, I kind of thought he reminded me of Khan. They really kind of tried to make him like a bit of a Khan-ish character.
Well, because he has a beef with Spock. He was like a con for Spock almost.
Yeah. And
he even yells Spock's name dramatically.
Yeah, he does. And I mean, you feel for the guy. His entire planet was destroyed. You know, he thinks Spock is obviously at fault for that. And that's all what's driving the whole storyline. which I thought was interesting because it really, you take this, in a sense, time travel, you know, and you're this one little event causes life to just totally change. And it was really interesting. That opening scene where, you know, the ship's coming out of like the thunderstorm that they call it, and the captain's just like, what year do you think this is? There's no Spock in Starfleet.
Yeah. It's a great scene.
We also can't forget, this is the movie that introduced us to Chris Hemsworth
as Kirk's father. Apparently, yeah. Matt Damon was originally tasked to do the role.
We knew, I think going into the movie, we knew that he was going to be Thor. Because I think we were like in the theater and like everyone like, oh, that's going to be, he's going to be playing Thor in the Thor movie.
That's a great question.
I wouldn't be surprised. We knew that coming in.
So he did, Star Trek is his first film. Wow. In 2009, yeah. And then 2011, he played Thor. So there is a strong possibility that we might have known he was going to be in it. But we also have Bruce Greenwood as Christopher Pike, who plays the original commander of the Enterprise.
I like that little nod back to the original pilot for Star Trek, because the famous story is that Kirk was not the original captain of the Enterprise. It was Christopher Pike. And so that name is just always, and that's also, I think, in one of the new Star Trek TV shows, they focus on Christopher Pike's character.
I think Star Trek benefits from going into its past a little bit more, just because, mm-hmm. like, we know Star Trek and we know the Next Generation. You didn't watch the Orville, did you?
I tried, couldn't get into it.
That's a shame, because that's another show that I would love to talk about here, because it is such a love letter to Star Trek, especially. And, mm-hmm. you know, we thought it was going to be a comedy, but it wasn't. But anyway, I digress. But going back to this movie, so this movie comes out, and I think we benefited from not being big Star Trek fans and going into it, because I remember seeing this movie and I was like, that was really freaking good. And obviously it did well enough. It respawned its own franchise. I think they gave it its designation in the Star Trek lore is the Kelvin timeline. On a budget of $150 million, this movie walked away with $385 million in 2009. That is really good.
That is. And 2009 was, 2008, we all know it was the big year of, Marvel, mm-hmm. Dark Knight and all that. And 2009, as I recall, was not that big of a year. So this was good to see this movie come out. And it's kind of, I want to say this was, obviously Avatar would take the gold but I want to say this might have been the second biggest movie of the year. But it was, again, for us, it was a pleasant, good movie. We just enjoyed it. We didn't walk into this movie with any high expectations. We were not diehard Star Trek fans. We were not, fingers crossed. We were just hoping to see a good movie. And I think we both agree we did. I still stand by that. I think this movie was very well cast. Everybody played their part great. And going back and looking at the older movies and then the TV show, it obviously different interpretations, but, it still works.
Oh, absolutely. So
you don't want to copy. I mean, I know Spock is a tough character to go away from. You can't not be Leonard Nimoy. Obviously, I think Zoe Saldana probably gave a little more to Uhura, John Cho a little more to Sulu, and obviously Chris Pine. I mean, again, you don't want to be like accused of just copying, William Shatner. So I think he gave it his all on his own. So it was just everyone, I thought, did a really good job.
Yeah, so a lot of the cast were allowed to bring things that they wanted to bring to the characters from the old show. Like Chekhov does he replaces his V's and W's. Like mm-hmm. Anton Yelkin was allowed to bring, like they all got some choice as to what they wanted to bring. Because again, I agree, Sean, you don't want to just carbon copy I don't want to watch Chris Pine doing a Shatner impression for an entire movie. I want to see him, make this character his own. So he they all brought the right aspects of their character to film. Star City rating for Star Trek 2009.
I give it a solid 3.5.
I think I'm right there with you. I might lean towards a 4, especially if you look mm-hmm. at the other films in the franchise or this specific franchise. Because I grew up watching the movies. I remember watching the movies as a kid. I didn't watch the shows. So obviously Wrath of Khan is the best Star Trek movie of all time.
Wrath of Khan, I enjoy First Contact.
First Contact's really good.
Generation franchise. I always remember the Voyage Home where Spock is swimming with the whales.
Yeah, with the whales.
That's like an iconic Star Trek moment.
I even like Nemesis.
About the movie. I learned more about the movies from this documentary that I just watched, and I definitely want to go back and watch. And obviously the original Star Trek movie, Star Trek the Motion Picture, I mean, we wouldn't have the Star Trek films if it wasn't for Star Wars. I mean, really, it's you know, the success of Star Wars is what drove Paramount to be like, guys, we have this science fiction franchise, you know, why don't we do something with it to really, you know, continue on? And that's and the motion picture Star Trek gets a bad rap. It's considered boring, you know, a lot of people don't like it, and that's why Wrath of Khan is just universally loved, because it really was Star Trek.
Yeah, but we you know what, I'm gonna have to do a fan feedback Friday for Star Trek, because unfortunately we don't have one for this week due to all the issues with
we didn't give him credit, but J.J. Abrams knocked it out of the park, I thought, with
yes, I think, like, I knew of J.J. Abrams. I knew, like, what he did Lost, correct?
Yeah.
And he did another, what was the other big thing that J.J. Abrams did?
Alias. I think he did Alias.
Alias. Maybe that's it. But I like his style. Obviously, there are a lot of jokes about all the lens flares at this point. But, like, I like J.J. Abrams. And again, when they had him pick up Star Wars, we were excited for that first movie. And it's a shame too, because, like, obviously we've seen what happens with Star Wars. But yeah, I'm trying to think, what else did he did Armageddon?
He's a very big script doctor. He has doctored a lot of scripts over the last 30 years. Like, you'll always see, like, on the trivia, like, J.J. Abrams wrote an uncredited draft of this movie.
Oh, he did Felicity.
That's what he did. Oh, he did Felicity. Oh, that makes sense, because he did Mission Impossible 3, and that's why Kerry Russell was in that. I forgot about Mission Impossible 3.
Oh, he was an executive producer on Almost Human. Do you remember that show with Carl Urban? It only lasted one season, and
it was on Fox.
It was really good. That's a shame. But yes, so we will have Fan Feedback Friday next week. Unfortunately, with everything that was going on, I dropped that ball. That ball is dropped. But at least I got an episode. I got episodes of MF Uncensored and Multiverse Fancast out. So make sure you guys check those out. If you guys want more of our content, you can go to our website, themisfitfaction.com. We're also on all the social media. Find us on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook. Just type in Cinematic Adventures or The Misfit Faction. Odds are you'll find some of our stuff. But I think that is, in fact, going to wrap us up for today. As always, I'm Paul.
I'm Sean.
And we'll see you guys next time. Sean, say goodbye.
Bye.